The US dollar has been the dominant currency in the global financial system since the end of World War II. However, that system is changing. More and more countries around the world are seeking alternatives to the US dollar, in particular because Washington has weaponized its currency and used the dollar to serve its geopolitical interests. The US and its allies in Europe froze $300 billion of assets belonging to Russia's central bank, and the US Congress has passed legislation that will allow the US government to seize that is to steal that money from Russia and to use it to pay for Ukraine. Before that, the US government also seized the foreign exchange reserves of the central banks of Venezuela, Iran, and Afghanistan. Today, many other countries fear they could be the next target of the US government, and they have begun to diversify their reserves and also to de-dollarize their trade. This includes two of the world's largest economies, China and Russia, which are de-dollarizing both their international trade and their reserves. And Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, has reported that China and Russia have almost entirely dropped the dollar in their bilateral trade. As of April of 2024, more than 90% of trade settlements between China and Russia are carried out using their own local currencies, the Chinese renminbi or yuan, and the Russian ruble. In 2023, China and Brazil also signed an important deal to de-dollarize their trade and instead use their own local currencies. Brazil's leftist president, Lula da Silva, has been particularly outspoken on this topic, calling for de-dollarization all around the world, and he's been very critical of the US government's economic policies targeting poor countries, developing countries in the global south, and in particular, he has condemned US-dominated financial institutions like the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, for trapping developing countries in unpayable debt. What's remarkable is it's also longtime US allies which are trying to de-dollarize their trade as well. In fact, Saudi Arabia has said that it's in discussions with China to price its oil sales to China in Chinese yuan, not in US dollars. When China's President Xi Jinping visited Riyadh in 2022, he signed a series of agreements with the Gulf countries and also with the Arab League. And at that meeting, President Xi announced that China is working on a plan in order for China to import oil and gas from the Persian Gulf region using yuan, not dollars. In fact, we've already seen a few of these transactions happen. In 2023, China announced for the first time that it had bought gas from the United Arab Emirates and paid for that gas in yuan. So de-dollarization is very much happening. This is not just a hypothetical process that could happen in the future. It already is happening, and it started slowly, but it has been gradually picking up pace. In the two decades from 2000 to 2020, the US dollar's share of global foreign exchange reserves gradually declined from over 70% to just under 60%. And in the past few years, especially with Western sanctions on Russia and China and the war in Ukraine and growing geopolitical tensions, this process of de-dollarization has significantly expanded. And when we talk about de-dollarization, I think it's important to distinguish two different kinds. Sometimes people lump them together, but they're quite different. I was speaking earlier about de-dollarization of international trade, which in many ways is the easiest form of de-dollarization. But another form of de-dollarization is de-dollarization of foreign exchange reserves, of essentially the savings used by countries around the world held by central banks in order to stabilize their currencies. Central banks can strategically use these reserves in order to manage their exchange rates. So if they think their currency is too overvalued against the dollar, they can sell some of their currency and buy dollars. Or if they think their currency is too weak against the US dollar and they want to strengthen their currency, they can sell some of the dollars they hold in their foreign exchange reserves and buy their currency in foreign exchange markets. And what we've seen in China is a significant de-dollarization of its foreign exchange reserves in the past decade. In 2014, the People's Bank of China, that is China's central bank, saw its peak level of U.S. Treasury securities. Those are U.S. government bonds, that is debt. It's U.S. government IOUs. And since 2014, China's central bank has been gradually dropping its holdings of U.S. Treasury securities. And as of 2024, they are now under $800 billion, falling from a peak of about $1.3 trillion a decade ago. Now, for the most part, the People's Bank of China has not been selling many of its U.S. Treasury securities. Instead, it's been letting them mature because they have a certain maturity date. You know, usually 10 years is pretty common. So after they mature, China instead uses the dollars that it receives from that bond in order to invest in gold, in oil, in metals, in other assets. China has been lending its dollars abroad. And for the most part, this has been a rather gradual process. However, there are some prominent voices in Beijing that are calling on the People's Bank of China to de-dollarize even more quickly. And this April, the Western Financial Press published reports highlighting comments that were made by a prominent Chinese intellectual who has influence in the political system. The vice dean of Renmin University's School of International Studies, Di Dongsheng, has been calling on China to drop its U.S. Treasury securities, warning that the U.S. can use them to hold China hostage, and also warning that by holding this U.S. government debt, China is actually helping reinforce Washington's exorbitant privilege. Now, I should point out for people who don't know, Renmin University is one of the top schools in China, and it also is quite close to the government. And the School of International Studies at Renmin often has played an advisory role for the Chinese government. And this article notes, this is an article in the South China Morning Post, it cites this scholar, Professor Di, who pointed out that the U.S. government's exorbitant privilege allows Washington to binge on debt and make gains at the expense of others. I recently published a video in which I analyzed a study that was published by an economist who estimated that the exorbitant privilege of the U.S. dollar, the fact that the U.S. government is the only country on earth that can print the global reserve currency, that provides massive benefits to the U.S. economy. And if that exorbitant privilege were to end, it would probably result in a fall in average daily income in the U.S. of between 27% and as much as 57%. I will link to that related video in the description below. This influential Chinese scholar, Di Dongsheng, argued that instead of relying so much on holding dollars in its foreign exchange reserves, China can simply control its capital account, that is, maintain strong capital controls in order to fend off external risks and short seller attacks. So to prevent foreign speculators from trying to profit from attacking China's currency, China can use capital controls. And we do see that the People's Bank of China is continuing to drop its holdings of U.S. Treasury securities. And Bloomberg reported this April that the People's Bank of China bought gold for 17 months in a row. And this is actually a significant reason why the global price of gold has significantly risen in the past few years. Of course, it's also because of fears of inflation. Many investors have been moving out of dollar assets and instead investing in gold. But the People's Bank of China is one of the world's largest financial institutions. This is a massive institutional investor with trillions in its foreign exchange reserves, potentially. At least in the past, it had trillions. So the fact that China is now buying large sums of gold is a significant reason for the massive increase in the gold price. A very mainstream economist has been reporting on China's de-dollarization of its foreign exchange reserves. His name is Robin Brooks. He is currently at the Brookings Institution, which is a very mainstream think tank in Washington that is funded by the U.S. government and other Western governments. And as he wrote, China is trying to decouple financially from the U.S. And he notes that in the past, China invested a lot of its dollars in U.S. treasuries. Now it's building inventories in oil and base metal imports. This is financial decoupling. And he has a useful chart, and you can see that in the past few years, especially with growing geopolitical tensions, the war in Ukraine, China has been investing a lot in buying more and more oil, gold, and other metals, important commodities that it needs to run its manufacturing sector. And China, of course, is the world's leading manufacturing producer, responsible for about 35% of gross manufacturing output in the entire world. Robin Brooks created another useful chart, and it shows that China's imports of basic metals have increased by 60% since before the pandemic. And he notes that China doesn't want to put the dollars it earns into treasuries because that will only deepen its dependence on the US. So China builds inventories in dollar-denominated commodities. And again, this is very important for China, which is the world's manufacturing superpower, and it is the world's leader, in particular, in green energy, which is needed for the transition toward renewable energy technology. So it's not just gold that the People's Bank of China is buying, but also China is using a lot of the dollars it receives from its international trade, and China has a very big current account surplus. So China has been using that in order to invest in oil, and China is filling up its strategic petroleum reserve. In 2023, China had actually taken some of that oil out of its strategic petroleum reserve in order to try to bring down the crude price. And now China is filling that back up. And another very important use of the dollars that China receives is simply going into providing loans, financing for Global South countries. This is part of China's Belt and Road Initiative. Many developing countries have a chronic shortage of hard currencies that they need to pay for infrastructure development, they need to pay for imports. China has been providing that financing. So this is a way that China can both de-dollarize and it can help to build infrastructure in important trading partners. And China's philosophy is if it helps Global South countries to develop, these will be important trading partners for China in the future. So it's an idea of what China refers to as win-win cooperation or mutually beneficial collaboration. China benefits from getting a trade partner, and its trade partners benefit by getting more robust infrastructure and spurring economic growth and poverty reduction. What we're seeing is really a historic shift because for many years now, China has been one of the largest creditors to the United States, which means that Beijing was essentially helping Washington to maintain its massive current account deficit, its trade deficit with the entire world, and allowing the US to continue to run massive deficits and import significantly more than it produces. The political economist Giovanni Arrighi explained this quite clearly back in 2007 in his book Adam Smith in Beijing. He pointed out that after the popping of the dot-com bubble in the US around 2000, he noted that Japan and China were the most important creditors for the US government. And he pointed out that in 1997, on his way back from a G8 meeting in Denver that featured considerable chest thumping by the Clinton administration about the booming US economy, Japan's prime minister told a New York audience that Japan had been tempted to sell large lots of US treasuries during Japan's negotiations with the US over auto sales, and again when exchange rates were fluctuating wildly, while the United States appeared preoccupied only with domestic issues. As one commentator noted, Hashimoto was simply reminding Washington that while it had created a robust economy, Asian central banks held the deed. And in the same book, Arrighi also pointed out that the current accounts of the countries of the global north taken together have experienced an escalating deficit, for the most part due to the massive US deficit, which corresponds simultaneously to an escalating surplus in the current account of the rest of the world, in particular, the former third and second worlds, that is the Global South and the former socialist bloc in Eastern Europe. And Arrighi pointed out that the growing dependence of Northern and especially U.S. global financial domination was on a flow of money and credit from the very countries that are most likely to become the victims of that domination. Giovanni Arrighi wrote that back in 2007, but it's exactly what we're seeing today, nearly two decades later. China was the most important creditor to the U.S. government, and now it is de-dollarizing. China had previously been the largest foreign holder of U.S. Treasury securities. China has been dropping those holdings, and now Japan is the largest. This is the official data from the U.S. Treasury's website, and you can see that China's holdings have been declining. Just in the past year, they've fallen by about $100 billion, from $869 billion to $775 billion. Meanwhile, Japan has actually been increasing its holdings of U.S. Treasury securities, which as of February of 2024 are now at $1.17 trillion. And this also comes at a time for the U.S. economy, which is quite difficult because the U.S. government has been dealing with large rates of inflation. So the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Central Bank, significantly raised interest rates, and it has been engaged in quantitative tightening. That is, it has been slowly trimming the assets on its balance sheet. And this comes after, of course, over a decade of quantitative easing in which the Federal Reserve printed trillions of dollars in order to buy many different assets, including not only mortgage-backed securities, but also treasury securities. The Federal Reserve became one of the world's largest investors in U.S. government debt. And now the Fed is slowly allowing that debt to mature, dropping its holdings of U.S. Treasury securities. And this, combined with rising U.S. interest rates, have resulted in very high yields on U.S. bonds, which have neared 5%. These are very high rates after over a decade of very low rates. And this is becoming very difficult for the U.S. government, which wants to reduce the yields on these bonds, because the higher the yields are, the more expensive it is for the U.S. government to run massive deficits. Like, the U.S. government is still running deficits of over 6% of GDP. And the U.S. government's federal debt is now at 122% of GDP, which means that the higher yields are, the more that debt grows. And furthermore, this has led to a contradiction, because the U.S. is trying to bring down inflation, so the central bank raised interest rates. However, the debt is so high that as the debt increases, the interest payments that the U.S. government has to pay to holders of bonds, those interest payments are so high that they are also fueling inflation. So the U.S. is getting to a point where it's difficult to manage both inflation and its debt at the same time. And then add the fact that China is no longer purchasing U.S. Treasury securities. That's the loss of a massive investor in the market, which results in decreased demand for Treasury securities and therefore higher yields. So the U.S. is starting to see serious consequences for its fiscal and monetary situation. And this is precisely because of the gradual erosion of the exorbitant privilege of the U.S. dollar. It's not going to disappear overnight. It's going to be this kind of slow, gradual process that we see happening, but it is happening. And there are some mainstream economists who deny this. Some of the pundits in the Western media deny this. But of course, my viewers and listeners probably understand that they should not take those people seriously. They have drunk the Kool-Aid of the U.S. government, and they believe that the U.S. dollar and the U.S. empire, based on the dominance of the U.S. dollar, is invincible. But as we've seen with the very rapidly shifting geopolitical situation in the world, it is anything but invincible. On that note, I'm going to conclude. I'm Ben Norton. I am the editor-in-chief of Geopolitical Economy Report. Please like and subscribe. Please share, and I will be back very soon. I'll see you all next time. Thanks a lot.